Record 37. Infusorian. Doomsday. Her room. In the morning in the dining room, my neighbour to the left whispered to me in a frightened voice, "Eat, will you? They're watching you." It took all my strength to smile, and at that it felt like some kind of rupture across my face. I smile. The rupture cracks open wider, and it hurts all the worse. So it went. I just managed to spear a cube on my fork when the fork would start shaking in my hand and clink against the plate, whereupon everything started shaking and ringing. The tables, walls, dishes, air, and outside a huge round iron clamour reached all the way over heads, over houses, to the sky, and then petered out far away in barely noticeable little rings like ripples on water. I looked up to see faces instantly drained of all colour, mouths paralysed in mid-action, forks frozen in the air. Then everything went haywire, shot off the familiar rails. Everybody jumped up from this place without singing the hymn. Everybody, which way, out of time, still chewing, choking, groping one another. What was that? What happened? What? And these disorderly splinters of the once great sleek machine, they all scattered downstairs to the elevators, down the stairs, step stamping, fragments of words like bits of shredded letter whipped away by the wind. From all the neighbouring buildings, they came scattering out in the same way, and after a minute, the avenue looked like a drop of water under the microscope. Infusoria locked in the transparent glassy droplet going berserk, sideways, up, down. "Aha," goes this triumphant voice, and I see in front of me the back of someone's head and a finger pointed up to the sky. I very vividly remember the yellow-pink fingernail, and at the base of the nail a white crescent like the moon creeping above the horizon. And this finger was like a compass, hundreds of eyes following it, and looked at the sky. There, rain clouds were tearing along, trying to escape some invisible thing chasing them, crushing and leaping across one another, and, tinted with the colour of clouds, the dark arrows of the guardians, dangling the black elephant snouts of their spy tubes, and farther still, in the west, something that looked like... At first, nobody understood what it was. Even I, who'd found out a lot more, alas, than anyone else, didn't understand it. It looked like a huge swarm of black arrows, quick little dots that you could hardly see at some incredible altitude. They got closer and closer, hoarse, guttural droplets of sound coming down to us. Finally there are birds overhead. They fill the sky, sharp, black, piercing, falling triangles, beaten down by the storm. They swarm on cupolas, on roofs, on pillars, on balconies. Aha! The triumphant head turned round, and I saw who it was. Him, the beetle-browed one. But little remained of his old self. He was like a book that had vanished except for the title. He had somehow crawled out from underneath the eternal overhanging brow of, and now on his face, around his eyes and his lips, lines were sprouting like hairs, and he was smiling. "Do you understand?" he shouted to me through the whistling of the wind, the wings, the cawing. "Do you understand? They've broken through the wall. The wall, I'm telling you." Somewhere off in the background, figures with their heads stretched out were flitting past and hurrying to get inside the buildings. In the middle of the sidewalk, there was a quick avalanche of post-operative cases who nevertheless seemed slowed by their weight. They were headed over there to the west. Hairy tufts of rays around his lips, his eyes. I I grabbed his hand. Listen, where is she? Where is I-330? Is she on the other side of the wall? I need to... Don't you hear what I'm saying? Right now, I can't... Here, he shouted through his strong yellow teeth like a grinning drunk. She's here in the city. She's doing it. Hoo-ha, we're pulling it off. Who is this we? Who am I? Around this one were some 50 others, exactly like him, who had crept out from underneath their brows, loud, happy, with sets of strong teeth, their mouths open to gulp down the storm, waving around their lethal electric weapons, inoffensive enough to look at, but where did they find them? They were moving west, the same as the post-operatives, but flanking them along Avenue 48, which ran parallel. I was stumbling over tall houses woven out of the wind and running toward her. Why? I don't know. I was stumbling. The streets were empty. The street was strange and wild. The triumphant clamour of the birds would never cease. It was doomsday. In several buildings, I could see through the glass walls, this sank in, that male and female numbers were copulating without the least shame, without even lowering the blinds, without so much as a ticket in broad daylight. The building, her building, the door seemed lost and was standing wide open. The control desk downstairs was empty. The elevator was stuck somewhere in the middle of the shaft. I ran, gasping for breath, up the endless stairwell, the hallway, the numbers on the doors flying past like the spokes of a wheel. 320, 326, 330, I-330. Through the glass door, everything in the room was scattered, mixed up, crushed. Someone in a hurry had flapped a chair over and it was lying there with its four legs in the air like a dead cow. The bed was crazily pulled out at an angle from the wall. Pink tickets were scattered around the floor like fallen petals that had been trampled on. I leaned over and picked one up, then another and another. All were marked D-503. I was on all of them. Drops of me, melted, spilled over. That was all that was left. It somehow seemed impossible to leave them like that on the floor to be walked over. I gathered another handful, put them on the table, spread them out carefully, looked at them, and started laughing. I'd never known this before, but now I do, and so do you. Laughter comes in different colours. It's only the distant echo of an explosion inside of you. It might come in holiday colours, red, blue, golden, rockets, or it might be the bits of a human body flying out. On the tickets I glimpsed a name I'd never heard of. I don't recall the number, only the letter, which was F. I swept all the tickets off the table onto the floor and stepped on them, on myself like this with my heel, and left. I sat in the hallway on a windowsill opposite her door and waited, vacantly and long, for I don't know what. Shuffling footsteps came from the left, an old man with a face like a punctured bladder that had collapsed and folded up with some kind of clear stuff still oozing slowly out of the puncture. I finally formed the vague idea that these were tears. He'd already moved on a piece when I came to and called him. Excuse me, listen, do you happen to know number I-330? The old man turned, waved his hand in despair and shuffled on. At dusk, I went back home to my place. In the west, the sky, every second, was going through a pale blue spasm. This was what caused the dull, muffled rumble. Birds perched here and there on the roofs, like black smouldering firebrands. I lay down on the bed and slept, and sleep fell on me instantly, like an animal, and smothered me. Record 38. I don't know what goes here. Maybe just a cigarette butt. I woke up. The light was so bright it hurt my eyes. I squinted. There was a sort of corrosive blue smoke in my head. Everything was in a fog. And through the fog I hear myself saying, "But I never turned the light on. How?" I jumped up. Sitting at the table, her chin resting in her hand, I-330 was looking at me with a ironic grin. I'm sitting at the same table now, writing. They're behind me already, 10 or 15 minutes of time, savagely compressed into the tightest of springs. But it seems to me she only just this moment shut the door behind her, and I might still catch up with her, grab her hand, and maybe she'll laugh and say, I-330 was sitting at the table. I rushed to her. "It's you. You. I saw your room. I thought you'd..." But I'd covered only half the distance when I found myself against the sharp, immovable javelins of her eyelashes and stopped. I remembered her looking at me just the same way that time on board the Integral. And now I had 1 second in which to figure out a way to tell her everything so she'd understand. Otherwise there'd never be... "Listen, I-330, I've got to tell you all..." "No, wait. I need a sip of water." My mouth was as dry as if it had been lined with blotting paper. I tried pouring some water, but couldn't, so I set the glass on the table and grabbed the pitcher with both hands. Now I saw the blue smoke came from a cigarette. She put it to her lips, took a drag, greedily inhaled the smoke, just as I was drinking the water, and said, "Don't bother. Don't say anything. It doesn't matter. You see, I came anyway. They're waiting for me downstairs. And you want these last few minutes of hours to be..." She tossed the cigarette on the floor and leaned far over the arm of the chair. The button was on the wall, hard to reach. And I remember how the chair teetered and two of its legs lifted off the floor. Then the blinds fell. She came up and threw her arms around me, hard. I could feel her knees through her dress, the slow, tender, warm, all-embracing poison. And suddenly, it sometimes happens that you're completely sunk in sweet, warm sleep, and suddenly something stabs you. You jump, and your eyes pop wide open again. That's what happened now. I suddenly saw the floor of her room covered with the trampled pink tickets with the letter F and some kind of figures on one of them. And they all rolled up inside into one ball. And even now, I can't say how that made me feel, but I held her so tight that she gave a cry of pain. 1 minute more, out of those 10 or 15, her head thrust back on the gleaming white pillow, her eyes half closed, the sharp sweet band of her teeth. And the whole time this reminded me of something, something I couldn't shake off, stupid, painful, something I shouldn't have thought of, shouldn't even now think of. And I hold her still more tenderly, more cruelly. My fingers leave still more vivid blue marks. She said, and I noticed that she didn't open her eyes, "They say you were at the benefactor's yesterday. Is that true?" "Yes, it's true." Then her eyes opened wide, and I was glad to see how quickly her face blanched, faded and vanished, leaving only her eyes. I told her everything, and there was only one thing. I don't know why. No, that's not right. I do know. Only one thing I held back. What he said at the very end about them needing me only for... Gradually, like a photograph in the developer, her face began to appear, her cheeks, the white band of her teeth, her lips. She got up and went over to the mirrored door of the wardrobe. My mouth was dry again. I poured myself a glass of water, but the thought of drinking it disgusted me. I put the glass on the table and asked, Is that why you came? Because you had to know that? She looked at me in the mirror, the sharp mocking triangle of her brows lifted up toward her temples. She turned to say something to me, but said nothing. She didn't have to. I knew. Say goodbye to her. I moved my or somebody's feet, hit the chair. It fell over and lay there dead, like the one in her room. Her lips were cold as the floor here in my room next to the bed had once been. But when she left, I sat down on the floor and bent over the cigarette she'd thrown there. I can't write anymore. I don't want to.